HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 83, recorded live Tuesday, September 25th, 2007. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Sean Burke from Microsoft makes an announcement that will change the way you write and debug .NET code.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes from HanselMinutes.com. I'm here with Scott and his special guest, Sean Burke. Hi, guys.
Hi, Carl.
How's it going, sir? So, Carl, we've got a surprise for you. Even though we're recording this on Tuesday, this is Friday, probably, or Thursday afternoon when the show's going live, and Sean's got a little something he wants to share with the group here.
Sean? Okay. This is a scoop, then?
This is a scoop. This is our internal Microsoft scoop we've got.
Awesome. Let's hear it.
All right, guys. Pretty excited about this, something I've been working on for a couple of years. We are going to be rolling out a program that allows developers to have access to .NET Framework source code.
Wow. Now, this is, I mean, we have Reflector. This is the source code. This isn't Mono or the other one, the other project?
Rotor?
Rotor. Not those. No, this is the actual source code for the .NET frameworks. It's not Reflector. This allows you to actually, in Visual Studio, step into .NET Framework calls, walk through the .NET Framework code, and then kind of build a better app.
Wow, that's
amazing. So
you're
going to be able to F11 into the code, is what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, it's not just the symbols?
Well, it's the symbols and the code. So you get full retail symbols. So those symbols are not stripped of member variable names and stuff like that. And then along with that, we're going to be shipping, but have a server that has the code on it. So what happens is Visual Studio, you'll do a couple of quick configuration steps with your Visual Studio 2008. And then once that's set up, you'll kind of magically start to get source and symbols for the code that you're debugging against.
That's incredible, Sean. So can I ask you why? Like what prompted this, and was there a big demand for it?
There's been a demand for it. There's actually a long story with this. I've been working on this as kind of a side project now for several years. Several years ago, I did a blog posting about kind of ruminating how we could deliver source code for Windows Forms, which is the project that I was part of at that point in time, and it generated a lot of excitement. And we had a fair amount of support for it internally, and it turns out releasing source for us has got a lot of moving parts associated with it, and it's just taken some time to kind of figure out the right story as far as how we can deliver it to developers in a way that's really easy for them to manage. There's a bunch of issues around, like, hey, what happens when we release QFEs or SPs, and the source goes out of date and stuff like that. And so we didn't really have a really tight story, and we wanted to make sure that we had a good story around this before we released it. And with the, you know, new version of Visual Studio Orcus, we were able to add some features on the client side, the Visual Studio side, and then come up with a story for the back-end server side that it gives a really nice seamless story so developers can just do a quick configuration step. They're not installing zip files and setting symbol paths and doing a bunch of stuff like that for different products. It's one setup, and then you get the source for everything that we have available at the time.
And it just trickles down, right?
It just trickles down, exactly.
And this is for all versions of the framework, including 3.5?
Well, we're doing it. So what we're doing is we're going to be releasing source for kind of the core framework immediately, and we're looking at a bunch of other stuff and trying to decide exactly which pieces we're going to release above and beyond that over time. But the setup in a way that we can kind of make those decisions, and we don't have to make them all right now. Developers can continue to get code over time, so we can kind of trickle these out. We're building essentially a platform for this so that teams, groups across Microsoft now have the option, if it makes sense for their business, to go ahead and release source in a reference model for developers.
Yeah, I'm looking up here at seanburke.com, SHAWNBURKE. This is in February of 2005.
Yeah, that's kind of when it all started.
Wow. It just says right there, I want to deliver Windows Form source code to you. I want to do it for years, and I'm putting together a plan to make it happen.
Yes.
What does that feel like to have a... Well, I actually, as someone who's worked at Microsoft now for a massive 2 weeks,
yeah,
I have extensive experience navigating over the last 14 days, and I can say that things do move a little slower than I was expecting.
This is one that I haven't been working on it steady for that long. This is something that I've been working on in spurts and finally got really good traction on and got a good plan pulled together 6 or 8 months ago, maybe, and then it's been pretty good progress since then.
What kind of things do you bump into? I know that during new employee orientation, they brought in LCA, they brought in legal and corporate affairs, and they kind of put the fear into us and told us all sorts of legal things and about protecting the company. And basically, if you want to do anything, you talk to LCA, you talk to legal and corporate affairs. Is this primarily a legal issue? Certainly, it's not a technical one, right?
Actually, you know, like I mentioned, the issue about how you deal with updates and multiple versions and stuff like that is a technical issue. So there actually is a fair amount of technical stuff involved. You know, I'm fortunate that I've had a great relationship. The other project I run, which is the Ajax Control Toolkit, is another issue that we're kind of shipping source, written by Microsoft developers. So I'm fortunate to have a great relationship with our LCA folks, and they're really smart and understand the technical issues. And I was able to sit down with them and kind of hash this out and understand what the risks were, and took it up through you know, my management chain, and had some really good open conversations with them about the benefits and the costs and the risks. And, you know, we felt like it's kind of, it's the right thing, and it's going to help our developers be successful on the platform. And like I said, we have a story that makes sense for delivery and update, and the pieces just kind of all came together.
Sean, I'm still kind of curious as to, you know, what kind of requests you had and problems that people were having that only having the source was the only answer to.
Actually, I can speak to that, Carl.
Yeah, sure.
So I worked at Carillion, right? We did online finance and e-banking. And one time I had to call up PSS and get a hot fix for something in ASP.NET, and I had to get it escalated and escalated. And I was spending time going back and forth with the hot fix engineer, trying to explain to him exactly what was going on. It was a little unusual, but I was actually able to tell him with Reflector kind of where I was in the source, but I didn't know what files, I didn't know what lines. I was basically saying, I'm in this function, in this class, all the member variables are wrong. The Reflector, of course, is not showing you the source. Reflector is showing you kind of the programmer's intent gleaned from the intermediate language. So it's not reality. But for the purposes of my debugging session, it was my reality. So I was kind of having to mentally sync back and forth with a guy who was actually sitting there looking at the source and telling him, here is the line. Of course, it wasn't the line because, you know, one line in Reflector might be 2 lines in the source.
Sure.
And we eventually synced up and the hotfix, you know, came out, and it's been pushed into all the versions of the framework. But that whole multi-hour, you know, 6 to 8 hour experience of going back and forth with this guy could have been made much easier if I'd simply said, look, I've actually found something. This is how it works, and this is how it ought to work. I think that's what it tells me.
Well, that's actually even the more advanced scenario. The simple scenario is this, is that especially when you're new to something or using a feature you haven't used before, and you're getting this exception from deep in the bowels of it you can't figure out. The docs don't tell you what this exception's doing, you know, why you're getting this exception. The news groups aren't telling you why you're getting this exception. And the reason nobody's doing that is because you're doing something just totally wacky, right? You just did something along the way that's completely backwards.
You or your hardware, one or the other.
Well, you or your hardware, exactly. So, you know, when you have the source, usually that's trivial to figure out. You can go to Visual Studio and say break on exceptions and make it happen and go, oh, it's because I didn't set the, you know, the Lambda variable to 12 or whatever like that. And it ends up being very simple to track down those sorts of issues if you can walk through the code. If you can't, they end up being, you kind of have to triangulate and, you know,
you have to glean
a lot of kind of backflips to figure it out. So there's a lot of simple scenarios where having the source allows developers to be much more effective in how they're using.
I see. So even if you could look at the code that threw the exception and walk into it and see when it says, you know, null reference exception, it's because I didn't pass in blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can understand that. But I thought that's, you know, Scott and I have been talking about using the symbol servers and things like that. And I thought with the symbols, that would be enough for you to look at a representation of the source code as well.
Yeah, the symbols don't help you too much with managed code.
Really?
Well, so if you think about native code for a second, if you don't have symbols for native code, what you get in your call frame is, you know, user32.exe, bang,
yeah,
some
offset
hex number, and another hex number. So that's totally useless.
Yeah.
With the symbols with native code, with stripped retail symbols, which is what you'll often get, you'll get a function name at least and an offset. And based on that, the engineer can go back and on our side can go back and figure out what line of code it is based on the offset. So you're kind of forward a little bit there with the retail stuff. With managed code, you always get the call stack. Even without symbols, you always get the function names.
Right.
So that's, you're kind of already there to begin with. When you add in symbols like strip symbols for managed code, then you might get some variable names in the locals window.
Sean, what's a strip symbol?
Well, strip symbols, essentially there's full retail symbols, which are essentially if you go to your machine right now and you create a project and you flip the configuration to retail and you build it, those are like full retail symbols. They just have all the line numbers in them, they have all the source file names in them, they have all the member variable names in them and everything. Strip symbols are kind of symbols that don't have that stuff. So I'm pretty sure the symbols that you get like off of the old Windows NT disks, or I'm not sure what's up on symbol server, but those I assume are stripped. They don't have file line numbers in them. They just have like function names and variable names and stuff like that.
Okay.
Right. Primarily function names and variable names. It's the name of the source code file that would then cause Visual Studio to say,
right,
oh, you know, using this offset, I found, yep, this function. I now want to go looking for this file. If you've ever had Visual Studio prompt you to open a file you didn't have.
Yep. That's exactly right.
Now you'll have that file. So at that point, I'm guessing here, right, Sean, at that point where Visual Studio would ordinarily go looking for the file in a few places, look in the path, look in the current folder,
yep,
before it pops open that dialog, now it has another step. It's going to go off somewhere on the internet.
Yep. Well, it's actually really seamless. All you need to do in Visual Studio is you just need to tell it where to go out on the internet to get the symbols. So it'll do its regular symbol search, and then it'll go ahead and if it finds the symbols out on the symbol server that we're putting together for the reference stuff, and it finds that guy, it'll download that set of that symbol file, that PDB.
Okay.
And then in that PDB is all the URLs to the source files. So it's actually
kind of
a nice cascading story. You get the PDB and you're done.
So all you have to do is attach to the, you know, put in the URL, the symbol server, and the source code will trickle down to you.
That's exactly right.
Sweet!
Yeah, it's really slick. And then what happens is that when you get a new version, you know, when we add, you know, either when we add more source up there, next time you debug, Visual Studio will go, oh, well, now I can find a symbol for this other DLL that I couldn't find last time. And boom, you get more. And then if versions change, you update, you get a queue. We haven't really decided how often we're going to push these up, but say SP for sure. And you get an SP, boom, you know, we push up the new SP symbols, and just magically you get the new PDB, it understands the versions, you get the new source.
And if you happen to be debugging and you hit some code that doesn't have source available, what do you get?
You get the existing experience.
All right.
Which is you either get, if there's no PDB available, you'll get assembly language, you know, no source available for this location.
Yeah.
I think maybe the scenario you're asking for is, what if the PDB points at a file that isn't on the server?
Yeah,
that,
well, that
shouldn't
too
happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that Sean just said something that was very interesting there. It was kind of a throwaway statement, but it was interesting to me where he said that, and the versions are all taken care of for you. So there's a hash somewhere that's being, it's keeping track, because
nice,
when something's built, you know, these PDBs that get created, everything needs to line up. If I remember correctly, when you set up a symbol server or a source server, and you can actually go up on MSDN and read up on how to make your own internal source server, so
yep,
your own company could have a source,
yep,
server, and it's really primarily a way to lay out a directory structure, isn't it?
Exactly. And so I worked pretty closely with the guy that invented that technology. We've been using that technology here internally at Microsoft for years. Essentially, what you can pretty much run any debug product here at Microsoft and automatically get source and symbols through this exact same technology. We have a centralized source and symbol server.
Yeah, that's great.
So it can handle like essentially infinite numbers of versions side by side. It's just
cool.
An X copy they can lay down right next to each other because of the way the file structure
so
is.
So, Sean, when does this happen, and where can we get the URL and the instructions for plugging it in?
So this is going to be available about the time we release Orcus.
Cool.
So the servers aren't online yet, so we don't have a final URL. We're kind of working out those level of details. Working with teams right now to figure out exactly what's going to be in our kind of, you know, launch lineup as far as stuff that's available. And then, like, even after that, what's nice, because this is a server-side story, is that we can continue to roll out additional offerings as time goes on.
That's fabulous.
The way it's disconnected from kind
of. So we've been promoting Symbol servers, Carl and I, just because I think they're cool, by setting up in different machines with the environment variables, showing them how Symbol servers are not just used by Visual Studio, but also by Process Explorer.
Yep.
If we've already set ourselves up for, I think it's msdl.microsoft.com or whatever the Symbol server is this going to be a different server, different DNS name?
It'll be a different one.
So you'll have a choice between just symbols or symbols and source.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Can you point to more than one symbol server?
Yeah, you will be able to. You guys brought up an interesting point, which is what happens if you have a source file in both places?
Yeah.
I assume it'll find the first. The way that the symbols resolution works, it goes in order. So I think as long as you configure the symbols and source one above just the symbols one, you'll get that PDB, and then you'll be in good shape. So I think it's just an ordering issue. Because if you go to the dialog in Visual Studio, it does have ordering.
I'm sure that one of the things that you've had to think about is the sizing of this. I've always thought it was interesting when I hit a website with IE7 or with Firefox, they go off and they look at a phishing server. And so I always think to myself, well, if every single person on the entire planet were using this product, there'd be this central point of failure.
Yeah.
How do you decide to size that? I mean, you have a sense of how many Visual Studios are out there, but you don't really know how many people are going to hook this up.
Yeah. So you're just talking about what our capacity is.
Yeah.
I'm working with the folks over in MSDN that are implementing the server side to put together some numbers for that. And we're basically, the really nice thing about this technology, Scott, is that the server side is a static file server.
Nice.
Right. So you're not dealing with like something that's doing a bunch of backflips.
Yep.
And server code, and you know, we all know that file servers are pretty darn good, or you know, IIS
fastest.
Is pretty darn good at throwing out static files.
Yep, especially when you add caching and things. No, that's wonderful.
Right. So then scaling this will be easy as long as it's behind the DNS name. Then everything else is easy.
Right. So what it means is that from our point of view, it's pretty easy for us to do the math about exactly what a server can handle.
Right.
And be pretty confident in that. So that's the upside. We're working a bunch of numbers to figure out exactly what kind of capacity we need. The real issue isn't so much the source as it is the symbol files, because the symbol files are a lot bigger.
Right. So it's more about the size of the space, because if you start thinking about all of the source and all the symbols, and then you think about, can you talk about red bits versus green bits and how those things can be a little confusing? Because we all think we have the .NET Framework 2 on our system, but we might have a hotfix or a patch, and that counts as different PDBs, right? Different source.
Yeah. Well, that's separate from red bits, green bits. So what you're talking about is just that every time we roll out either a QFE, if you call up, I think you can just download them now, but if you call up PSS and get a QFE, or you get a GDR that comes down through Windows Update.
Can you define some of those acronyms? I know QFE
is
Quick
Fix
Engineering.
Okay. So, a QFE, it's called Quick Fix Engineering. QFE is when it's a hot fix. We call them QFEs.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's usually one or two assemblies. It fixes a specific issue with your bits. The thing about the QFEs is that they're cumulative over time. So as we build QFEs, there's no way for us to manage building them all independently off of the original source trunk.
Right.
So they are cumulative over time. So that means as time goes on, if you get a later QFE, you're likely to get kind of more updated assemblies in a lot of cases. Which is going to make it more likely that some of the stuff is going to be out of date. So what happens is that what service packs are for us primarily are rolled up QFEs with a higher level of testing. So we get to a point and it's kind of all the cumulative QFEs between the last service pack or the release and that service pack, plus a bunch of additional testing to kind of make sure that they all fit together.
And GDR?
Really well. A GDR is a general development release. GDRs are like kind of urgent QFEs.
Okay.
It's not as big as a service pack, but a GDR is for like something really bad.
So you were saying before when I interrupted you about the acronyms.
Thank you for doing that, by the way.
No problem.
Go ahead.
No, you were saying before something when I interrupted you about the
acronyms. Right, so he was talking about the issue of pushing the data around isn't as complicated as getting the structure of the file system set up because you've got kind of a Cartesian product of versions and QFEs and different versions of the framework, so major, minor, build, revision. It could be quite a lot of data.
Well, the data, hard drives are cheap. So the data isn't as big of a deal as it is that just on your given machine, you know, what's the likelihood that one or more of the things that you're trying to debug are going to be out of date and that we won't have symbols and source available for them.
Yeah.
So this is something that I think that we're just going to have to do some learning. It's really hard for us to know what exactly the right cadence is as far as pushing updates out there. Mm-hmm. I think we're just going to take feedback, and the system is set up that's very, it's very easy for us to push new updates out there. We don't know if it makes sense for us to push every QFE out there or not.
So is this an Orca-specific thing, or does it go back to Express, and does it go back to 2005?
Does not go back to 2005. There's actually functionality in VS 2008 Orcas that supports mm-hmm. this.
Okay.
Now, when you say this, you're talking about the source code?
The ability to kind of actually go do an HTTP request for a source file is kind of the core piece.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, we're just about out of time, but what a scoop.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Cool, I think it's pretty fantastic. I'm stoked. So we're looking at this will be out when Orcas is released, when Visual Studio 2008 is released.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Awesome.
Sean, thank you. Scott, thank you, guys. Man. Awesome.
No, that's pretty cool, huh?
All right. We'll see you next time on Hansel Minutes.